Welcome back to the Placeholder Podcast, everybody. I'm Kaylee Fretz. We've got a great show for you today. This week on the pod, we've got Pippo Pizzato's grand plans. Haven't heard that name in a while. An interesting Giro route, the Brit who beat Remco in a time trial, and of course, as we do every week, a bit of Jumbo-Visma news. We'll leave that to somewhere near the end. Joining me today, Kit Nicholson. Tell me about your jumper.
I mean, it's got a trumpeter on it. I don't know whether I look like, I don't know. I think maybe I look like a four-year-old child who's been dressed at Christmas by their grandmother or something. But I don't know. I like it.
I think you look great.
Thanks.
Also joining me today, Ronan McLaughlin. Ronan, who did we just talk to?
Oh, we just talked to Matthew Haybor, head of performance with Jumbo-Visma, didn't we?
So if you want to listen to that conversation, it's going to be out in a couple of weeks on Performance Process, which, those who listen to this religiously will know that is the member-only performance-oriented optimization focused podcast that Ronan is putting together. So it was a really good conversation. I very much enjoyed it. I learned
some basically very interesting things. The process of going from winning no races and no Grand Tours in a season to winning all three Grand Tours in a single season, and how Jumbo-Visma achieved that in their whole philosophy and mentality and approach and setup. And yeah, who better to speak to than the head of performance?
Very interesting guy. They won six races, I think. Yeah. Back in 2015 or 16 or whatever the year we started talking about.
They've won 12 times six races this season.
Right. including they've won almost as many Grand Tours as they won races in that year.
You get the feeling had there been six Grand Tours, they might have won six.
I think they probably would have. Anyway, make sure that you are an Escape Collective member so you can get that podcast, because it's only for members. If you are a member, you should have already gotten an email with details on how to get those private podcast feeds. If you become a member, you will get the email once you sign up.
It's a one-time thing to get the feed loaded onto your podcast app of choice. Once you've crossed this hurdle the first time, the Performance Process podcast episodes will then just show up automatically in your feed as any other podcast does. And if you are having difficulty getting it, get in contact with me or somebody else in the team, and we can get you that email again, or we can get you a link to skip past the email and get you straight onto that list if you're a member.
Before we get on with the show, we have some quite unfortunate news, which does affect the podcast products here at Escape Collective. Our main Dane, our man Dane, our only Dane, our primary Dane, our good friend Dane, he had a pretty nasty accident. We think he got hit by a car. He doesn't actually remember. Dane ended up in the hospital over the weekend. He is doing okay. He is recovering well. He has no, we think, permanent damage, but pretty nasty concussion. Doesn't remember the incident. And for obvious reasons, we are forbidding him from looking at computer screens and editing podcasts and doing such things this week. So there will be and was no Pretty Serious Bike Racing podcast this week. And the other unfortunate news is that our plan to bring in a member to the quiz with us was somewhat reliant on Dane handling that. And so we're pushing that back once again, unfortunately. We'll have to compete amongst ourselves for another week, which is, not the end of the world. If you want to, listeners out there, if you want to send Dane a quick note, on Twitter or whatever, I'm sure he would appreciate it. He's currently not really looking at his phone, but his partner, Cecily, is taking a look at these things and passing them on. So if you appreciate Dane's work, if you're a Pretty Serious Bike Racing podcast fan, for example, send Dane a quick get well soon. I think he'd appreciate it. All right. Our first topic of discussion today. Kit, you brought this one to our attention. I was sort of vaguely aware this was happening already because we actually got an invite to go to some of these races. And I've been kind of keeping an eye on the goings-on of Pippo Pizzato over the last couple years. Now, for any new fans of the sport, Ronan, how would you describe Pippo Pizzato to a new fan of the sport?
I'm very carefully considering my words here.
So he's a vision in diesel jeans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Lots of hair on his face and his head.
Lots of hair. Mm. Yep, hair everywhere.
Can I say he's like stereotypical
Italian?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Mm. Yeah. He's like the most Italian man you've ever met. Basically, in a good way, like, yes. you know what you're getting. He's a very, very stylish guy. I remember he rocked up to a stage of the Giro one year And he had just like decided, I think the team was sponsored by Villiers at the time. And he just sort of like left his carbon Villiers at the bus and was instead riding some steel, like beautiful steel Villiers with like modern components on it. And I think he actually maybe started the stage on it and then swapped or something like that. Anyway, I really appreciated that.
Maybe
like,
worth,
you know, as it was showing that he's a connoisseur of the sport kind of thing.
Maybe worth starting before we get into the stereotypical Italian fashion and style and all that. Maybe worth also mentioning that he was a heck of a good bike rider in his day. Also won Milan San Remo as a pretty young pro with a fantastic descent off the Poggio. Was second in both Flanders and Roubaix, I think, and probably would have won it had he not been in Boonen and Cancellara's era / generation or whatever. And countless other wins and victories and that to his name.
I think I'm right in saying, I'm not 100% sure I'm right in saying, so if listeners out there, if anyone wants to correct me on this, but I think I'm right in saying that the year that there was a whole bunch of hoopla about Cancellara finishing Roubaix, maybe winning Roubaix on carbon wheels for the first time, because if you recall, not that long ago, you know, decade and a half ago, 2010 was essentially like the switch over between essentially everybody riding Ambrosio Nemesis aluminum tubulars for Roubaix and the start of the carbon era at Roubaix. Basically, carbon wheels getting strong enough that they're actually going to be able to finish the race. There's a whole bunch of hoopla around Zip doing this. And I think that the same year, Pozzato finished on the podium on Hyperons. And no one really, on 23 mil tires, and no one really said anything. I think that is the case. If that made any sense to you, that is, you know, on one side, you've got sort of like the marketing machine of Zip and SRAM and all the rest. And on the other side, you have maybe the less effective marketing machine of Campagnolo. But finishing Paris-Roubaix on basically a very light climbing carbon wheel with 23 mil tubulars. And I just love that little story about Pozzato. He floated like a butterfly, stung like a bee. Kit, all of this is just context. Why do we care about Pippo Pozzato again in 2023, almost 2024? Again, more than a decade past, I would say, his prime.
He wants to fix Italian cycling, basically. You know, we've still got some great Italian cyclists, although it feels like we're at a junction in eras. We've said goodbye to Aru and Nibali, and I'm actually struggling to think of anyone off the top of my head apart from Davide Formolo, who was a key player this past week. Pozzato has, since retiring a couple of years ago, taken the reins of a couple of old Italian one-day races and totally launched a couple of fresh new races. And he's talking about modelling them on the Flanders Classics. So you've got that week of, well, I don't know, a festival of cycling in the spring. So essentially the races that he's running at the moment are the Giro del Veneto, Serenissima Gravel, which is, I don't think it's a UCI race, but it wants to be potentially a part of the World Series. And then, so the Giro del Veneto is a very old race. It's been around for a very long time, but took about 10 years off. And then his new race, Veneto Classic. Trouble is, though, is that it's October and it's very hard to care about anyone racing bikes unless you need a new contract or you're honouring a contract at the end of your, you know, before you say goodbye to your old team. I don't know. It needs to be around the time of Il Lombardia, but it's a tricky game. Although the races are good, so I think there's scope.
The races are really good. And let's talk a little bit about what he's emulating. So he's emulating the Flanders Classic model, which is to take a couple races. And granted, Flanders Classic has the advantage of having the Tour of Flanders, slightly more important than the Giro del Veneto. But the model is to essentially take some old races and kind of package them up. You know, you build your VIP tents, you put it next to the Paterberg. You maybe update the courses a little bit. You make sure that the TV product is really, really good. You do all these things. You take races that were sort of stuck in the 20th century and you pull them into the 21st, right? That's the idea. It's definitely easier said than done. And again, Flanders Classics, one, it took them quite a long time before they really did coalesce these things into sort of a viable package. But two, they also had the Tour of Flanders. So obviously the moneymaker here for these races is then in the TV rights, which they can then go sell. Right. In the same way that ASO makes most of its money from the TV rights from the Tour de France, Flanders Classics is making most of its money from the TV rights associated with these big, big races. But they're also diversified. They're also, like I said, building VIP tents next to the Paterberg. They're doing all these other things that are pulling in additional revenue streams and are making the races stronger and, well, more likely to survive into the future, basically. And that's kind of what Pozzato is trying to to emulate, but sort of the baseline details are different.
Yeah, and he's got the a couple of races, and he's got a sportive event that runs the day before Veneto Classic. Something that would need to be sorted out probably would be the infrastructure, because we didn't get to see a lot of the finale of the Veneto Classic. And I don't know if that's just some slightly archaic existing structure in Italy, which is very possible, you know, and in the hills and the vineyards and gravel roads and what have you. He has said that he wants to move back into September. He doesn't really care that the Vuelta would be in the way, which is, I guess, fair enough, but it needs to be more relevant. And this year's a different one because the World Championships were at a different time. I don't know. It would make sense for it to be much closer to Il Lombardia. And, you know, Il Lombardia can be Paris-Roubaix, and he can claim that weekend before. Apparently he wants to buy the Giro dell'Emilia, which is currently in that Tour of Flanders-esque, you know, the first weekend of the big old festive week.
Can I be an old curmudgeon for a second?
Of course.
Yeah.
Is that even a good idea to try and replicate what Flanders Classics are doing? Like, he's taking races with words like Giro and Veneto and things that we know to be related to cycling or Italy, and then trying to make those races mean something by having them connected together. You know, but as you mentioned, Kit, they come after Lombardy, which I think is we're already at a point of the season where people's investment in watching cycling is dwindling. And then you compare it, you know, he's wants to replicate the Flanders Classics model. But what Flanders Classics have is Het Nieuwsblad, E3, Dwars Door, big, big races that not only mean something on their own, but also, given that they've cobbled climbs involved, are uniquely identifiable as part of that spring classics narrative. Whereas you turn on your TV, and if you don't have a commentator telling you where this race is, it could be a tarmac climb anywhere. It's, yeah, I just think wrong end of the season, wrong.
You don't recognize the Prosecco vines, Ronan? Come on.
I don't.
It's probably worth pointing out that the Giro del Veneto does have 88 years of history, but I absolutely agree. I mean, I think,
don't you be throwing your facts at me.
But it was, so I think David Rebellin won it 3 or 4 times, and 40 times it was in August. So it's not always been at this silly time of year. But there are so many of those Italian semi-classic one-day races that a Pogacar goes along occasionally, or a Yates twin goes along and smashes it, and it's like, oh, maybe I should have watched that. It looked like quite a lot of fun, and it's good terrain. Like you say, there isn't actually that much to write home about, and the cobbled climbs that we did see on Sunday, they need 100 years of history to get people talking about them.
I guess my question is more, if this was a business and you were an investor, would you be convinced by the need for more generic road racing at a time of the year when even the highest profile races like Lombardia struggle to gain attraction? Or would a better model for Pisato to have followed been, you know, something like along the lines of what he's done with Serenissima Gravel, more events like that where you're mixing sort of pros and gravel, and that of course opens a whole other can of worms and a whole other list of questions that I'm not even going to try and get into. I'm not sure if you really want to fix Italian cycling, this approach is going to really achieve anything. And I had a quick pro cycling stats search for top active Italian riders in the men's peloton at the moment, with Diego Alisi top, Elia Viviani second, Domenico Pozzovivo third in that rankings. He maybe does have a point that they do need to do something. I'm just not sure this is the way to go about it.
And he's mentioned he mentioned this weekend that he wants to set up a team. There are some pretty decent, or there have been some pretty decent Conti teams that have churned out the likes of Egan Bernal and Ivan Sosa, although they're not Italian men. All the same, there is an infrastructure there that is good at development. I think there was a quote, something along the lines of, if you watch the races, it's all old men come in from the fields and they've just, oh, there's some bike riding going on. Let's take a look and see what's happening. It's not drawing the young crowd.
I think France has the same issue with, like, the population watching the Tour de France inside France is getting older and older. These sort of old world European bastions of cycling, I think, are all struggling to some extent. I think he's got an uphill battle, but I think that it's sort of a worthwhile challenge and a worthwhile goal to try to reinvigorate Italian cycling in some way, because they've lost just this huge crop of races over the last sort of 2 decades or so. And if you don't have the races, you don't have the development pipelines, you don't have, you're going to end up, you know, with even fewer top pros coming from Italy than is currently the case. And we already have, if you take a look at So like the percentage of Italian riders that are in the Tour de France, for example, compared to 30 years ago, it's just a tiny sliver of what it once was. And certainly if you look at the Giro, the percentage of Italian riders has changed dramatically, although that's for some other reasons, most of the Giro kind of internationalizing more than anything.
I was on the finish line of Lombardia a couple of weeks ago. I can tell you that finish line was not made to appeal to the older audience. DJ Max was on the beats and he was pumping them out around, is it Malpensa? Is the name of the
airport? Malpensa Airport outside Milan? Yeah.
Bergamo. Ant McCrossan does like English commentary and there's like two or three Italian commentators in the same booth and it's like a dance off, but for commentators. They go back and forth, and as good as Ant is, the Italian charisma always shines through, even if you don't have a clue what they're saying. But Ant did from time to time take a second just to point out the fact that DJ Max was lifting the tempo as the riders reached the finish line. It was
DJ Max.
It was interesting.
I saw Roglic's first Grand Tour stage win in Tuscany, and that was a lot of fun. That was my first, yeah, so the Giro, and very wet day, but it was a lot of fun.
Can I do a Roglic tangent?
Yeah.
I have sources at the Bora team camp that's happening right now, and my sources suggest, unfortunately, they have requested anonymity because they are not authorized to speak on the vibes in question. They are suggesting that Primoz Roglic is a dude, a chill guy, cracking beers, cracking jokes at the Bora team camp. I bring you this breaking news because it runs afoul of everything that we know of Primoz Roglic, but this is what my source is saying.
I can believe that it. He's got a bit looser this year, isn't he? Except at the Vuelta, maybe. But the Giro, he was, I don't know, seemed a bit more chill.
He was obviously interviewing for a huge transfer, so that all makes a bit more sense right now. But yeah,
is Primoz Roglic a cool guy? Do we have to add this to our understanding of the sport? Let's take a break. We do like to keep an eye on the young time trialists here at Placeholder Podcast, mostly because young time trialists tend to be very good at all sorts of things when they get a bit older. The young time trialists, they've got a lot of watts, and then as soon as they figure out what to do with them, they turn into pretty good bike racers. And one of the riders we've been keeping an eye on from a young time trialist perspective is Josh Tarling. What did he recently do that brought him back to our attention?
Well, he's been winning time trials. He made a bit of a statement at the World Championships and came third in the elite time trial, having won the junior race last year and split and skipped under 23 entirely, which is a big statement. But he came third, which is pretty awesome, behind Evenepoel and Ganna. And then I think pretty soon after that, he won his first pro race at the Renui Tour, which is a world tour race, is it not? That's changed its name almost as many times as...
That's the Anigo Tour, if you're Pippo Pizzato.
Right, yes. But yeah, then he won the European Championships, and this weekend he won the Chrono des Nations, beating Evenepoel by 13 seconds and Stefan Bissiger by over a minute. And he apparently did so despite going the wrong way at a roundabout.
For those who read in English, the Chrono of Nations... which is a big deal time trial, and like you say, the biggest deal was who he beat, really. The fact that he smashed Remco Evenepoel, and I think Evenepoel said after the race, like, I just got beat today. That was all it was. And we know that Remco's not afraid to make an excuse when he's got one. Yeah, I think that was an incredibly impressive ride from Tarling. What else do we know about him? Where does he come from? What's his deal?
He's Welsh. He's very, very, very young. He's also very, very, very tall.
6'3", 6'4".
Which is very large for a cyclist. So he's not going to go and do the, I'm a great time trialist, I'm a teenager, I'm going to win Grand Tours. That would be a surprise. But if he's winning bike races by such margins already, he could be a bloody good time trialist. And he could like obliterate the international time trial scene for many years to come. He's still, as I've said several times now, he's still only 19. It's not like he's 19 and just about to turn 20. He's a real whippersnapper.
Probably potentially a decent classics rider as well.
Yeah, well, if you think, I mean, one example springs to mind is Cancellara. Started off as a phenomenal time trialist, was obviously a phenomenal time trialist throughout his career, but also had the engine to win classics.
To be clear, that is not an accusation.
No.
That is a metaphor.
Yes.
Yeah, and one of the points that he made, or one of the points that Evenepoel, in fact, made at the weekend was that it was a bit windy on the course, and it was a very, very flat course. And, you know, Tarling is, what, 80 kilos, and Remco is not. So, you know, he can he's not going to get blown off the road in E3.
One of the other riders that kind of comes to mind as a decent comparison is pre-nasty crash Taylor Finney. Similar in size. I think Taylor's actually a little bit bigger. Taylor's maybe like another couple kilos heavier, an inch or two taller, but still relatively similar riders. And same kind of thing where, you know, Taylor was showing up as a 17, 18 year old and, you know, winning world championships in the individual pursuit, not off the couch, but like close, right? Like he's just an absolutely phenomenal talent. And as a result of his size, the races that really ended up working for him was stuff like Paris-Roubaix, where, I mean, I remember him talking with him on it was a flight home, actually, I think after the classics, or a flight down to Girona. And he was saying, I think it was Sepp van Marck was on the same team as him at that point. And he's like, yeah, like I used to think I could go for Flanders, kind of like Sepp does. But then I realized that I'm like 15 water bottles heavier than Sepp van Marck, who's not a small rider, right? Like Sepp's a pretty big guy. And then you consider lugging 15 extra water bottles up, you know, the Quedamont. And it's pretty easy to see why Finney could never kind of fully make a go at basically anything with a hill in it. And I wonder if Tarling is just over that edge as well. I think, he is a little bit smaller. But yeah, he could be the type of rider that excels across the classics. He could be the type of rider that maybe we see more in Roubaix. He could be the type of rider that just mostly sits in time trials and is happy to do that. But like I said at the sort of the intro, when you've got the watts that he clearly has, I think there are lots of options for him as he sort of looks toward a professional career.
I mean, who knows what a rider's actual weight is, but if we take those stated weights to be somewhat accurate, he's in the same ballpark as Fabian Cancellara. Mm-hmm. You know, a heck of a lot taller, but similar weight ballpark. Who knows where he's going to end up? I think the fascinating thing, as has been for the past almost decade now at this time, is how many young talents come through and can be immediately successful. Sort of weird thing about that is that they're immediately successful and then the success dwindles, or is it just that the next crop of young generation coming through is even more talented? At what point then do we like break through the stratosphere, and you know, how can we keep having younger riders keep coming through and keep being better again? And the most worrying thing about all that is that actually Josh Tarling has a younger brother who is showing similar levels of talent, given that he was second in the junior Chrono de Nations on Sunday past also. So
I wonder if it's talent or if it's like,
I think there's a huge amount of actual traditional mindset breakdown in recent times, mm-hmm. where teams are now like, well, if you're good enough, you're good enough. It doesn't matter what age you are. Whereas a decade, two decades ago, it didn't matter how good you were. If you were 20, you couldn't be a pro. And
yeah,
for whatever reason, we keep coming back to Pizzato. But Pizzato was like the original junior straight to pro when he won second to Irish rider Mark Scanlon in the Junior World Championships in Valkenburg in 1998, and then went directly to Mapei a year later as a first-year senior pro. That didn't happen back then, and didn't happen for a long time until you had the likes of Pogaccia and Remco. Not Pogaccia, sorry, but Remco anyway. And now I think teams are just much more open to that. If you're good enough, you're good enough. It doesn't matter what age you're.
Yeah, and I think that the youngsters tend to be, these days, they're pretty up on the latest sports science. They're up on the latest nutrition. They're up on the latest technological stuff. I mean, all these things that allow them to step into the pro ranks and sort of already have a good understanding of what a pro lifestyle looks like. I think that's definitely changed. The amount of like freely available information. I mean, you used to have to sit inside a pro team and get told all these things by your coach or your nutritionist. And now, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, it's just everywhere on the internet. Like if you can open up Reddit, you can have a pretty in-depth discussion of, maybe that's not the place to go.
Escapecollective.com. Whoever's behind that, they're doing great stuff over there.
If you can click play on Performance Process, you can learn how Jumbo Visma went from kind of shit, as Mathieu said in the
words.
Episode. Yeah, his words, not mine, to the team that won, what, 70-something races this year and every single Grand Tour. And so I do think that's relevant as well. It's sort of like the school of hard knocks is not necessary anymore because you have just sort of actual school. And that's what the internet is provided for all these kids. Josh Tarling, somebody to keep an eye on. Finley, I think is his younger brother's name. Finn, also yeah. a rider to keep an eye on. Yeah, we saw this this result of the Crono de Nation over the weekend and thought it was worth highlighting because, yeah, it's a rider that
Worth highlighting because of the respect he was afforded by his rivals. Because, again, it's a weird time of year and, you know, Evenepoel wanted to show off his rainbows. He said it was a proper race. So, yeah, one to watch for sure.
Let's take a quick break. Welcome back, everybody. We got a couple quick news hits for you on today's show. We do have to update you on the Jumbo Visma stuff. Obviously, we talked last week about how the merger kind of fell apart. We also mentioned last week how we think that was largely due to sponsors, like equipment sponsors specifically. I should say, obviously, it was due to sponsors, but due to equipment sponsors specifically and Pawn, which is the sort of big holding company owning Cervelo and a whole bunch of other things, conglomerate owning Cervelo and a bunch of other brands, bike brands. Pawn basically coming in and saying to Specialized, which was trying to elbow their way in, nope, you can't come in here. We have contracts and we're sticking with them. And that notion was supported this week by the news that essentially Pawn is going to be the co-title sponsor of the whole team. Right, Kit?
Sort of. One of their other brands is going to be the co-title sponsor.
That's what I mean, though. Yeah. It's not Visma Pawn, but it is very much in the same way that, like, Jerry Ryan sticks a new Jerry Ryan brand on Jayco every single year. That's basically what they're doing. They're putting one of their brands on the jersey, which in my mind means that they're probably putting in additional funding. Whether they wanted to do that and they just put their hand in the air and said, we'll do the funding, we don't really know. The other possibility that I've kind of thought through and what occurred to me last week was that if Specialized came in and said, we'll do all the equipment and we'll give you a bunch of cash, potentially Pawn basically had to match that. And to match that, they basically became a co-title sponsor. I think that's a somewhat likely scenario. Anyway, what's the name of the team, Kit?
It's going to be called Visma Lisa Bike. Lisa Bike being the something about bike leasing for businesses. It's already on the jersey. It's on the left chest at the moment. Yeah, it's the same sort of, like you say, it's the same situation as, remember the blue tires at the Tour de France a couple of years ago? That was another one of their brands that was just like, hey, let's just show this off for a bit. That was Swap Feets. Remember that? No?
Mm-hmm.
Ronan does because he looks at bicycles.
Yes. The front tire is blue, but if I remember correctly, the...
Yeah, I think it's just the front tire. Or
no, but I think they like used them for the recon rides and the training rides before the race, but maybe didn't use them.
Oh, no.
I can't remember exactly, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, riding onto the stage for sign on that sort of thing. But yeah, so I think Pawn owns 110 companies or something. So pick from the lot and we'll just put Chuck Lisa Bike on the... it's going to take some getting used to that. Visma Lisa Bike.
I wonder, is that what... Androni Giocolati with all their sponsors.
Giocattoli,
was it? Some other version of Pawn with 110 companies and everyone with 110 sponsored the team.
Yeah, that would be great.
My understanding of Androni Giocattoli is that one of the reasons they had so many sponsors is one of the ways you could ride for the team is if you brought a sponsor with you.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's Italian cycling.
It's very Italian cycling. So,
I would
say
that is cycling, not just Italian cycling.
Yeah, that's very
true. That's certainly how Mark Cavendish works.
It's also Formula One, for what it's worth.
Yeah. The pay driver, pay rider kind of thing. I mean, obviously, you know, when Gianni Savio was working with Egan Bernal and riders like Ivan Sosa, those guys were coming in without having to bring cash. But if you're sort of like a mid-level Italian pro who wants to ride for Androni, you might need to bring your local cement factory to stick on the back of the jersey or whatever that may be. A bit of a tangent there. Anyway, that's the Jumbo Lisa Bike news. That is a bit of a mouthful, but we'll get used to it eventually.
They're going to have to
sign. Sorry, not Jumbo. I already said it wrong.
Yeah,
Visma Lisa Bike. Jesus. Visma Lisa Bike for next year. In other news, the route of the 2024 Giro d'Italia was announced last week. What's the kind of high level, Kit? I think we'll leave the deeper dive for another episode, potentially a pretty serious bike racing episode once Dane is recovered and back. But what's the high level? What are the
highlight is 68 kilometers of time trialing.
Yeah, that's pretty, I mean, insane. Yeah, so 68 kilometers of time traveling. Most of it
threw up
flat.
A little bit in my mouth. Actually, I'm pretty pleased because it's I have two small children by then, and it'll be a little bit of nap time for me. So I'm looking forward to those particular days of the Giro.
But so the highlights are bucket loads of time trial kilometers, but it's got far fewer big old climbs than usual, and it's about, what, I can't remember the figure, was it 20% shorter than we've seen in a long, long time? 20% sounds like a lot. It's not so much climbing, and it's not so much distance either. And
except for time trial distance, which is what it is. So they want Tadej Pogacar to show up. That was my read off of this, because they were like, okay, what are the climbs that Tadej Pogacar does not like? 2-hour climbs in the Dolomites. That's what we don't like. And so we're going to make him do a whole bunch of 25 to 30 minute punchy climbs in colder weather, something else Pogacar likes. And they're going to try to get him to show up. I don't think he's going to.
What's quite funny about the long climbs is that they've hidden one early in a stage. The Chimacopi? That's not right. The
Chimacopi.
Stelvio, anyway.
Chimacopi,
I know.
If you're taking pronunciation lessons from me, Kit, I have an
Italian uncle. This is terrible.
It's a bit confusing because like a single C, you like it's not always a ch, right? Because in copy, it's k, but in Chima, it's ch. I don't actually know the rules. I just know it's called the Chimacopi.
Yes, it is. Anyway, it's the Stelvio. So that's what, 2,700 meters, but it's early in the stage. So they're hiding the big climbs. They want to try and do the, they also, besides, you know, trying to tempt Pogacar, which I don't think is going to succeed, they also are trying to, you know, cultivate the short, sharp, dynamic, exciting racing that we've seen a bit of at the Tour lately. Yeah, which is cool. They have also got, as I've just said, a couple of the high altitude finishes, which are always like playing with fire at the Giro because of snow and it being May. So it might be an even less climby Giro than they're even promising it to be.
So does Pogi show up?
Nope.
No.
I say no for two reasons. One, wouldn't that be in some way admitting Vinigo is unbeatable, which I'm sure Pogi doesn't think, and he will be targeting getting a third tour. And also, isn't the tour like a week earlier than usual next year because of the Olympics?
Yep.
And so doing the double is maybe even less likely than it has been in recent years.
And he tried the different tactic, the different approach to the tour this year, and it was great and it worked. And it's probably why UAE is at the top of the UCI standings, you know, all the one day wins that he did in the spring. But it didn't really work in preparation for the tour. So I can't imagine that doing the Giro is going to be a good alternative.
I think if he just avoids breaking his wrist in the A's next year.
That's a good point.
It may work out even better next year. That's what he will and his team will be thinking happened this year, was that such an injury so close to the tour was ultimately the difference.
He did say in his post-Tour de France press conference, where we get to talk with the top three, right? He did say that he maybe overextended, I'm paraphrasing here, overextended a little bit in his spring. He said that he likes to come into every season with sort of some big goals, and his big goal this past year was a whole bunch of races, the one days early in the season, including Flanders. And yeah, I think that he will make some changes as a result, not least because he doesn't want to break his wrist in Liège again. That's relatively unlikely, but I think that he just basically, whenever you enter those races, you put yourself at risk. I don't think he's going to not do any of them. He's not going to go like full training camp. I don't think that's him, but I think that they will try to mitigate some of that risk in places, maybe drop that calendar a little bit. That's certainly, and again, this is the eve of the end of the last tour, so he hadn't fully thought through it yet, but that's what he sounded like at the end of July this year.
The risk has already been mitigated because the Belgian authorities tarmacked the pothole that caused the crash for the very next day or something. So very soon after the race.
Has anyone gone and like stenciled his face on it or anything like that? I think that would be fun.
His wrist, stenciled his wrist.
Put a little like headstone. Here lies the death of the dreams of Tadej Pogacar in 2023.
I can't decide if Pogacar is more likely to say, I've won Flanders and so I don't need to risk doing it again, or I've won Flanders and that was fun, so I want to do that again.
I could see him racing Flanders because it's far enough away, but I could see him maybe cutting it off a couple weeks early.
I think he definitely wants to go back to Liège and get that given.
Well, he was so close to doing the triple this
maybe
year.
Maybe he'll just race them all again.
Yeah, maybe he'll just do it all again. Cross his fingers.
And try not to break it. Yeah.
But who does go to the Giro? Because Roglic isn't going to go. He wants to win the Tour, obviously, with Bora Hansgrohe.
Pizarro.
It could be.
Free the Eagle, Kit.
What?
Free the Eagle.
Free the Eagle. Yeah. It's a lot of time trialing for the eagle, except that he's quite good at that.
Yeah, he's not bad.
Got to be fit to... talking rubbish because he did all three this year. Never mind.
Yeah. We're talking about Sepkus, of course. Yeah. The eagle of Durango.
But the point I was winding towards was that there's a fairly good, fairly old British former time trial phenom. Too many Fs, PHs. Geraint Thomas.
Bradley Wiggins.
Bradley Wiggins could come back and do it. But Geraint Thomas, if he's feeling like he wants to go and win a Grand Tour and have a leadership role, this might be quite a good one to go for. And especially as we're pretty sure that neither Roglic, Remco, Vingegaard, or Pogacar are going to be at the Giro. Enric Mas isn't going to win it because there's too much time trialing. It could be a very interesting Grand Tour without Thibaut any of the really big hitters. Oh, that would be nice.
I think Theo Gegenhardt and the Yates brothers and Jai Hindley. Yep. Mm-hmm. Ben O'Connor.
It's going to be an interesting Grand Tour.
It could be really, good because we've got this duo, right? Like, I feel like if there's one dominant Tour de France rider, there's a whole bunch of guys who are like, all he has to do is fall down and I could win the Tour. But when there's two, the chances of both of them falling down are significantly lower. And so a bunch of the other riders, like the Ben O'Connors and the Jai Hindleys, that are like, I'm going to go for race the Giro instead.
And Jai Hindley's not going to get a leadership role at the Tour.
Not this year. Nope. I think it'll be a good Giro. I like the course. I like the punchy climbs. I don't love 68 kilometers of time trialing.
There's some gravel.
But maybe we'll do like a live pod with Ronan during the time trial and he can point out all the weird stuff they're doing. We can see if they start stuffing stuff down their jerseys like they do in the UK crit scene.
May I draw your attention to the time trial in the Tour this year and the time trial in the Tour in 2020 and the time trial in the Giro this year.
The time trial in the Tour this year ruined the Tour de France run-in. I don't know what you're talking about. It was the end of the Tour de France. We're like, okay.
it gave me loads of... talking points to write about.
You did write like one of the most successful stories from a page views perspective of anything we've written at Escape Collective off the back of that time trial. But it also ruined the Tour de France. So I'm sticking with my guns here.
So did that pothole in Liège though.
Also true.
So you're so quick to blame the time trials and you never think of the potholes.
I'm sticking with blaming the time trials. All right. I think that's our news for this week. It's time for Weekly Pain.
Oh, I've forgotten about that. Damn it.
You guys thought you were going to get out of it because you were going to have to... Only one person was going to have to compete against one of our members, but then Dane got smashed into by a driver, and so we're going to do that next week, maybe the week after. The theme of today's Weekly Pain is the owner, founder of PP Sport Events, Pippo Pizzato. If you have the Pro Cycling Stats page of Pippo Pizzato open on your screen, please close it. Because we were looking him up earlier. Your first challenge, Kit and Ronan, is to name all of the teams that Pippo Pizzato rode for. We're going for different any team name. So even as the sponsors change, because he's basically on the same team for most of it, as the sponsors change, that counts as a new team name this time. So I need team names.
Hang on. He's getting a book out.
A notepad.
Oh, he's got so many in your head, you have to list them to be sure.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus, I'm screwed.
So any team that he rode for all the way from his first year in 2000, which was actually already mentioned by Ronan, to his final year on a pro-continental team in 2018. And because Ronan has a huge advantage in any quiz related to PP sport events, we're going to start with Kit. So, Kit, give me a team.
I'll start with the most recent one, which I hope I don't get wrong. Willia Tristina?
That'll do it.
Thank you.
Ronan?
I'm thinking I'll go with one of the obvious ones because that is a strategic move, and I will say Quick Step.
That's good because I would have forgotten that one, but I can picture it again.
Not so strategic.
I'm thinking of the garish kits. That's I shouldn't have given that away, should I?
That is correct. Kit, give me another one.
Leaky Gas.
Correct.
You mentioned it, so I'm
2008 and 2007. Back to you, Ronan. Ronan's got like 15 of them over there. So
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh, wow.
Listed here.
I think that might be all of them.
Can I just concede now because I've got one left?
Katusha.
Katusha is correct. Back to you, Kit.
Lamprey Merida.
Yep. 2013, 14, 15 was Lamprey Merida. Back to you, Ronan.
Mappe.
Mappe turned pro with Mappe in 2000, rode with them through 2002.
Was it 2000? So he didn't go direct from junior to pro then. He was pro, he was junior 97, 98, no? Unless he was junior 98, 99. Anyway, sorry.
He was a junior in 99 because he was fourth at the World Championship men's junior road race.
And he was second the year before in 98.
Yep. Okay. Back to you, Kit.
Time.
There's one other one other big one. There's one other big one that you can... We got 3, 2, 1. All right, Kit. If Ronan can get one, you are out of this round. Ronan?
Fassa Bortolo.
Correct. That was the other big one. And Ronan takes the point. Well done. It is 1-0. We're playing 2 quiz rounds today, by the way. Your second quiz... This is a Price is Right style game. You need to guess the total kilometers raced by Pippo Pizzato in 2010. Price is Right rules, meaning if you go over, you're out. Closest one wins. I'll give you a little bit of a hint here, which is in 2010, Pippo Pizzato raced the Tour de San Luis, the Tour of Qatar, Tirreno, the Giro, Tour de Wallonie, Vuelta a Burgos, Vuelta a España, and finished his season with Lombardia. So you have some idea of how many big stage races he did there. Your guesses, please. We're going to start with Ronan here.
I think we should have to like type into the chat box our answers and then simultaneously hit enter.
We could do that.
I think that would be a fair way.
Or just
can
you
I
guys
just can concede
just,
now?
Just slap. Just
your guess is as good as mine.
No, you both have to. You both have to send me a number on Slack. You have...
How long do we
10
have?
10 seconds. 10 seconds.
Oh, that's... I can't even
ten.
Think how much
Slack
how far people go.
9.
No, I'm just... Can I just concede?
7. Nope. 6.
I don't even know
send
what
me
the
a number.
Distance people
5.
Do now.
I can't even 4. Find you on Slack.
3. 2. 1.
It's 1 year, yes?
Yep. Okay, I have Ronan's.
I didn't even know that this type of data was. Yeah.
That's
put your,
too
put
big
your number,
a number
in Kit. Put your number in Kit.
I just put too many zeros, and that's not a good thing. It's not a good start.
Why do I feel like I wanted to change mine? I think I just you did the countdown, and now you've kept going. I like bam, enter.
No, I've done too many. No, I haven't.
All right, we have our two entrants. We have our two entrants, Ronan. Your guess was 12,000 kilometers of racing. Kit, your guess was 15,000 kilometers of racing. The actual number, Pippo Pizzato's total race kilometers in 2010, 16,309.8. The winner of round 2 is Kit Nicholson, which means you both have a point, which means you tie today. You each, it's a draw. You each get a point on the big
board.
Can
we go back to Kit forfeiting?
Well, I nearly put 12,000 in and I thought, but bike races were longer then. And so I just added a few.
They were quite long. 16,000 kilometers of racing
quite
in 1 year. Mm. I haven't ridden that far in a year in a decade. It's been a very, very long time. All right. Well, that is it from us today. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on another episode of the Placeholder Podcast. Do send your best wishes over to our man, Dane Cash, and we'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.